You're watching a Highwire Media podcast.
The Zodiac Killer case, one of the most chilling unsolved criminal sagas in American history, captivated the public imagination for its gruesome acts and cryptic taunts. By episode 6 of our season, the narrative shifts dramatically, moving from rural Northern California into the dense urban grid of San Francisco. This transition reflects more than geography. Symbolizes a transformation in the killer's modus operandi, revealing an evolution from randomness to deliberate signature-infused patterning. Two key events, Lake Berryessa on September 27, 1969, and the murder of Paul Stein on October 11, 1969, serve as inflection points in this progression. At Lake Berryessa, college students Brian Hartnell and Cecilia Shepherd fell victim to a calculated assault that combined theatrical costuming with ritualistic violence. Just 2 weeks later, the murder of Paul Stein, a San Francisco cab driver, appeared at first glance to be a standard robbery. Yet forensic and behavioral clues linked it to the same elusive figure, the Zodiac. Tonight, we dive into these two events, exploring the killer's stylistic escalation through eyewitness accounts, forensic evidence, symbolic messaging, and geographical analysis. We examine how the Zodiac transformed from a nameless assailant into a self-styled legend through the use of coded symbols, performative violence, and taunting communications. The juxtaposition of these two crimes, one staged in open daylight near a lake, the other under the urban veil of night, illuminates a disturbing consistency in method and identity. Ultimately, what emerges is the clear development of a Zodiac signature. A cohesive psychological and behavioral profile taking shapes through escalating terror, chilling precision, and an uncanny awareness of spectacle. Welcome to the True Crime Never Sleeps show. I'm your host as always, Larry Lace. And yes, on this episode of True Crime Never Sleeps, we dive into the Lake Berryessa murder and the murder of Paul Stein as we continue our series on the Zodiac Killer. Before we continue, let me know your thoughts on this case in the comments section below. And with that, let's keep going. To understand the significance of the Lake Berryessa and Paul Stein attacks, one must first grasp the Zodiac Killer's evolving criminal strategy. Prior to September 1969, the Zodiac had already committed at least two confirmed double shootings, one on December 20th, 1968, near Vallejo, and another on July 4th, 1969 in Blue Rock Spring Park. These initial attacks were conducted with firearms in secluded lovers' lanes with little direct interaction beyond the violence itself. However, by late 1969, the Zodiac's approach had become bolder and more theatrical. Instead of simply ambushing victims, he began staging events with symbolic costumes, handwritten notes, and a performative element that suggests a craving not just for violence, but for attention and infamy. This pivot signaled a shift in psychological orientation, from latent aggression to overt, calculated exhibitionism. Moreover, his correspondence with newspapers, including ciphers and claims of responsibility, began to reveal not just a desire to evade capture, but a compulsion to craft an identity. Criminologists often refer to this stage of behavioral evolution as a signature escalation in which serial offenders introduce unique, personal elements to their crimes, distinct from the modus operandi that satisfy internal needs. The Lake Berryessa and Paul Stein cases crystallized this evolution. Both crimes presented elaborate theatricality, suggesting that the killer was no longer content with anonymity. He was now building a brand, a persona known as Zodiac, complete with a cryptic symbol, stylized language, and a narrative that would echo through public consciousness. This transformation makes these two cases critical in profiling and interpreting the Zodiac's underlying psychopathology. Lake Berryessa, a tranquil reservoir in Napa County, became the haunting backdrop for one of the Zodiac's most enigmatic assaults. On September 27, 1969, Brian Hartnell and Cecilia Shepherd, both students at Pacific Union College, were enjoying a picnic near the lake shore when they were approached by a man dressed in a black hooded costume, bearing a white circle cross insignia on his chest. This location diverged markedly from the previous attack sites. Unlike secluded nighttime ambushes, Lake Berryessa was a public space during daylight. The killer's choice of this environment suggests a calculated risk, indicating a heightened confidence or desire to amplify fear among ordinary people. He approached the victims calmly, holding a gun, and claimed to be an escaped convict seeking transportation. The victims complied, and Hartnell even attempted to engage the man in conversation, trying to humanize himself and Cecilia in hopes of de-escalation. The killer responded with chilling detachment. After tying the couple with pre-cut lengths of plastic clothesline, he methodically began to stab them, 10 times for Shepard, 6 for Hartnell. The juxtaposition of natural serenity with the brutality of the act enhanced the psychological terror. According to Hartnell's later testimony, the attacker never raised his voice or broke composure, underscoring the calculated nature of the violence. This incident marked a departure from simple murder to ritualized performance, where every element, location, costume, and dialogue was orchestrated to convey a deeper symbolic message. The Zodiac Killer was no longer just killing, he was staging terror for effect. One of the most haunting aspects of the Lake Berryessa incident was the killer's use of a costume, an executioner's hood with clip-on sunglasses and the Zodiac's cryptic insignia prominently displayed. This garb transformed the killer from a mere mortal into a figure of psychological terror, evoking mythic, almost supernatural qualities. It also represented the emergence of a formalized signature, a unique element that reflects the killer's internal fantasy. Hartnell's vivid recollection of the costume offers crucial insight. He described the attacker as tall and heavyset, wearing a square-shaped black hood that draped over his shoulders. The circle cross symbol, a target-like insignia later used in Zodiac's correspondence, was displayed on the chest like an insignia. This outfit was not hastily thrown together. It reflected deliberate planning, further distinguishing this attack from previous ones. The costume served dual purposes. On a psychological level, it dehumanized the killer, reducing him to an avatar of terror. On a forensic level, it concealed his features, minimizing witness identification. Yet, paradoxically, it also created a lasting image, one that would etch itself into the minds of the public, law enforcement, and eventually media adaptations. For criminologists, such behavior reflects what Douglas and Ressler describe as a fantasy-driven compulsion, where the killer reenacts deeply embedded narratives. The executioner costume served not merely as a disguise, but as a psychological trigger for the killer's internal script. Combined with the verbal interaction and the stabbing, the costume helped transform this crime into a horrifying ritual of control, domination, and display. After stabbing the victims and disappearing into the woods, the Zodiac left a chilling message. A handwritten symbol and note scrawled on the door of Hartnell's white Carmen Ghia. His crude inscription included the Circle Cross logo, the dates of his previous crimes, and the time of the attack. It read, Vallejo, 12-28-68, 7-4-69, September 27th, 69-6-30, by knife. This act functioned as both confession and claim of authorship. Writing on the car door elevated the crime from murder to manifesto. By etching his symbol and chronology, the killer framed the event within his growing mythos. The killer had not only enacted violence, he had curated it, like an artist signing his canvas. The inclusion of weapon by knife also represented a pivot in methodology. While prior attacks relied on firearms, this one involved prolonged intimate violence. The car door signature bridged these elements, contextualizing the deviation as part of a larger intentional pattern. Handwriting analysts later examined the inscription, compared it to the Zodiac's letters, noting similar letter formations in Though crude and possibly rushed, the car door note aligned with the Zodiac's communicative style. Compact, direct, yet cryptic, stylized. In the realm of forensic psychology, this act constitutes a clear signature behavior, distinct from the MO and aimed at satisfying psychological needs like recognition and dominance. The car door, in its simplicity, functioned as a public declaration. I was here, I'm evolving, fear me. Following the attack, Brian Hartnell was taken to Queen of the Valley Hospital in Napa, where he recounted the incident to Napa County detectives. During the interview, investigator Thomas Cahill reportedly took notes in a hospital notebook where Hartnell painstakingly drew the killer's symbol, the circle with a cross running through it, along with his memory of the costume. The sketch became one of the most important visual artifacts in the Zodiac's investigation. It confirmed the intentional use of a reoccurring logo, previously seen only in the killer's letters. Excuse me. Cahill's notebook entry essentially canonized the Zodiac insignia, elevating it from symbol to signature. Hartnell referred to the attacker as part of his Zodiac squad, a phrase he used to make sense of the surreal encounter. Although this phrase was likely metaphorical, some investigators initially wondered whether the Zodiac acted alone or with accomplices. Ultimately, no corroborating evidence supported a squad theory, but the concept fed into the mythologizing of the killer as a shadowy, organized entity. Cahill's notebook also preserved the first-hand description of the costume in a courtroom-admissible format, offering forensic insight into the killer's deliberate presentation. The care with which Hartnell reconstructed the symbol in the presence of detectives, under duress, in pain, further validated the symbol's importance in the killer's mind. Symbolism is key in signature crimes. The Zodiac repeated use of the circle cross motif led disparate crimes together in the public psyche, helping transform a faceless criminal into a narrative archetype, a villain with his own sigil. On October 11, 1961, 2 weeks after the Lake Berryessa attack, the Zodiac struck again. This time, the crime bore none of the ritualistic features of the previous assault. The victim, Paul Stein, was a 29-year-old cab driver working a late shift in the upscale Presidio Heights neighborhood of San Francisco. Stein picked up a passenger in the theater district near Union Square, who instructed him to drive to Washington and Cherry Streets. At approximately 9:55 p.m., residents heard a gunshot and looked outside to see a man wiping down the cab. Paul Stein was found slumped in the front seat, dead from a single gunshot wound to the head. Executed with cold precision. This urban killing initially confounded police. It appeared to be a routine robbery until the Zodiac himself shattered that illusion. He mailed a letter to the San Francisco Chronicle, enclosing a torn piece of Stein's bloody shirt, and claiming responsibility for the murder. This letter forced investigators to retroactively connect the crime to the previous Zodiac attacks. Though stylistically different, the Stein murder retained core Zodiac characteristics: sudden violence, theatrical communication, and a cryptic claim of authorship. His transition from rural stabbings to urban shootings suggested not just escalation, but adaptability. The Zodiac was capable of shifting formats while retaining his psychological footprint and overarching purpose. Moreover, by targeting someone engaged in public service and striking in a populated area, the killer demonstrated increasing brazenness. Stein's murder announced to San Francisco that no one, not even a cab driver in a safe neighborhood, was beyond the reach of the Zodiac. In the immediate aftermath of the Stein murder, police were dispatched to the scene based on a witness call. However, a crucial miscommunication occurred. The suspect was described as a black male adult, possibly due to a dispatcher's transcription error. This mistake allowed the real killer, a white male, to walk right past officers at the scene. Witnesses, including three teenagers watching from an upstairs window, described the suspect as a white male around 5'10 with a stocky build and light brown or reddish hair. He was seen calmly wiping down the cab and walking north toward the Presidio. These descriptions closely matched previous composite sketches derived from other Zodiac sightings. The fact that the Zodiac eluded immediate capture despite a strong witness presence and a nearby police patrol only enhanced his mythos. In a later letter, he even mocked the responding officers, failing to apprehend him, claiming, "The cops pulled a goof." This episode is crucial in understanding the Zodiac's psychological disposition. He was not merely evading justice, he was actively humiliating law enforcement. The killer exhibited not just cunning, but contempt for institutional authority. Moreover, the shift from isolated lovers' lanes to populated urban spaces suggests a new strategy, embedding himself in the very fabric of public life. The dispatcher audio and eyewitness accounts reinforce the idea that the Zodiac was no longer operating in the shadows. He was moving in plain sight, shielded not by darkness, but by misinformation and systemic failure. One of the most compelling forensic exercises undertaken by investigators and armchair sleuths involves mapping the Zodiac's travel patterns by overlaying the locations of confirmed attacks, Benicia, Vallejo, Napa, and San Francisco. A crescent-shaped geography emerges, suggesting a killer familiar with the Northern California region. Lake Berryessa sits approximately 80 miles northeast of Presidio Heights. While this may seem a vast distance, the timing between attacks implies mobility and premeditation. Investigators theorize that Zodiac might live somewhere central to all known sites, possibly in Vallejo or the East Bay. Moreover, the rapid shift from a rural park to the heart of San Francisco hints at a killer who not only traveled comfortably, but selected contrasting environments to demonstrate versatility. The precision with which he navigated both open spaces and urban grids supports the hypothesis that the Zodiac possessed not only geographical knowledge, but tactical awareness. Map overlays, often seen in Zodiac documentaries, highlights this journey, drawing visual lines that connect desperate murders into a coherent spatial narrative. These visual aids emphasize that the Zodiac was not randomly opportunistic, he was strategic. While the Zodiac crimes varied in location and immediate method, they exhibited strong consistencies in underlying patterns. These consistencies pointed to a unified actor employing adaptable tactics undergirded by a fixed psychological signature. So key aspects of his MO include targeting young couples or isolated individuals, striking in low surveillance or transitional areas, using misleading explanations or subdued behavior before the attack, and of course, escaping undetected, often in possession of incriminating evidence. Yet it is the signature behaviors distinct from the MO that solidify his identity across scenes. The consistent use of the circle cross symbol, communicating through letters and ciphers, escalation in psychological theater, especially with the Lake Berryessa costume, writing on objects at the scene, sending tangible evidence to news outlets, Paul Stein's shirt. Criminal profilers distinguish MO from signature because the former can change for pragmatic reasons, while the latter fulfills psychological needs. As the Zodiac evolved, his MO diversified. Guns, knives, urban, rural, but his signature crystallized. These hallmarks fulfill what forensic psychologist Dr. Richard Walter described as psychological rituals that feeds the killer's internal fantasy. The Zodiac's consistent use of these rituals across differing contexts affirm that these crimes stemmed from a singular compulsive drive rather than opportunism or multiple offenders. The development of the Zodiac's signature was not incidental, it was integral to his emerging identity as a mythic figure of American crime history. By analyzing the Lake Berryessa and Paul Stein cases together, a coherent picture of the Zodiac killer's evolution emerges, from rural stabbings to urban shootings, and from wordless attacks to cryptic confessionals. His trajectory reflects not merely a shift in logistics, but a deepening psychological agenda. At Lake Berryessa, the Zodiac performed a theatrical, methodical assault. He appeared in costume, tied his victims, etched his symbol, and vanished, all while maintaining a ritualistic composure. At Presidio Heights, he executed a swift, silent kill, yet punctuated it with a symbolic trophy, Stein's shirt, and a mocking letter. The delivery may have changed, but the intent was the same, to dominate, to confound, and above all, to be remembered. Together, these episodes show a killer crafting not just a body count, but a mythology. His consistent use of symbolic markers, the circle cross, taunting letters, direct communications, elevated him from just murderer to a media phenomenon. He was not content with death. He sought spectacle. This strategic branding is what sets the Zodiac apart from many serial killers. As profilers like John Douglas assert in True Criminal Signatures, serve not just to identify a killer, but to express his identity. The Zodiac used his crimes as a stage and his victims as unwilling actors in his ongoing performance. Though the Zodiac was never caught, these two crimes remain cornerstones in understanding his psychological profile. Through them, we witnessed a transition from anonymity to infamy, from killing to messaging, and from method to myth. The Zodiac didn't just leave victims, he left a legend. And with that, that is our episode for this week. Let me know your thoughts in the comment section below. And of course, if you want to support the channel, you can buy us a coffee at buymeacoffee.com/TCNS or just scan the QR code that you see on screen. And of course, everything you give, whether it's $1, $5, $20, $50, $100, $1,000, it all goes right back into the channel so we can upgrade our equipment. I guess this microphone camera setup really isn't the best that we can do. We'll be able to hire somebody and create more content with them and pay them. And of course, we can take this show on the road, do live episodes from major crime scenes from across the country, possibly even across the world. And with that, thank you so much for watching and listening. We'll see you next time.